Hello, this is Dolores Cannon again, and this is the Metaphysical Hour. And I would like to give out the numbers that you can call if you do want to call in during the show. The one number to call for the states is 1-888-268-4313. That's 1-888-268-4313. For those people that are international and in other countries, if you want to call in during the show, the number is 1-281-419-7697. 1-281-419-7697. If you want to call in any time during the show. Okay, tonight is going to be a little different. This will be my first time to have a guest on the show. And so we're going to see how it's going to go. I have a woman here who has come all the way from France. And she's my publisher over there. She lives in France, but she has translated and published two of my books in Holland. So they were translated into Dutch. And she's come all the way from, she lives in France, so she's come all the way here to visit. And so I wanted to let her interview her tonight, and we'll find out about some of her work, especially in Europe, and what she has done. Right? And it was funny because she said when people, their very first time to come to America. And people were saying, where are you going in America? She said, Arkansas. And it's like, what is in Arkansas? Most people, when they come to America for the first time, want to go to New York, Chicago, one of the big cities. But she said, no, she's not interested in that. Isn't that true?
Yes, I just wanted to go to you and do some sessions. And no, I was not interested in going and seeing America.
Not the big cities.
No, I don't like cities. I like the countryside. And
The big cities don't appeal to you.
No, not that much.
Okay, I guess I better tell her name so you'll know who we're talking to. Her name is Riet Okken. And she lives in, where is it? It's in the east of France?
In the southeast, yeah, in the Ardèche. It's a little village in the mountains of France, south of France.
Oh, what is it near a big city?
It's near Lyon and Vermont.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But you're back in the country just like I am.
Yes. Yeah.
Said you like to be out there by yourself like that.
Oh, yeah.
As Reed said, she has her center and her publishing company is in a what used to be an old mill. And they have renovated it and fixed it up for the living quarters.
Yes.
And for you have classes there and people come?
Yeah, we have there, we organize weeks where people go for an intensive retreat. Most of the time up for a week, and then we work in a group of 10 people doing a lot of emotional work, spiritual work, but it's for me it's all combined, so we work a week together, and then we go again to Holland. So most Dutch people and Belgian people.
A lot of them do come from Holland, then, for your
classes.
Yes,
the most, yeah. Just Dutch speaking. My friend is not so good that I do already a French-speaking group. So it's a Dutch group, yeah.
Makes it easier that way.
Oh, yeah.
But you said the building is an old mill that dates back to the 1700s, isn't
Yeah.
But it must have sat empty for a long time, didn't it?
Yeah, it was for 20, 30 years was it empty, and then another Dutch owner came, and then he sold it to us, yeah.
But it's had 25 rooms, so it's...
Yeah, it's a big...
It's a big building.
Yeah.
And I can imagine the amount of work it must have taken to start making it into a place to live in again.
Yeah. We did a lot of his friends, and we had all the money in the house, so we did it all by ourselves in the beginning.
Mm-hmm. How many years ago was that?
Nine years ago.
That you found the old mill.
Yeah. It was an inner voice who told me if I wouldn't like to go to France and live there. I said, yeah, why not? Yeah, I would like to go. And then they showed me...
When she says the voice, I think people out there who are into metaphysics know she's talking about what I call them, they. You know, we hear these things in our minds, and if we're smart, we will listen to it.
Mm-hmm.
And you might say intuitions, guides, guardians, higher self.
My higher self, yeah. My sister up there, I always say.
Our sister up there. Okay.
Yeah.
But I was wondering, you know, why you were from Holland, and you lived, where, around Amsterdam?
And I lived in the south.
South of Holland, and all of a sudden you end up in France.
Yeah, we had just our house renovated in the south of Holland, and then the voice came and said, you like more warmer climate, you get better ride, you have more inspiration when you are in nature. I said, yes, it's true. So there is a house ready for you there. So they talked about a mill. And I thought, mill in France? I mean, the mills are normally in Holland. I didn't know France very good. And so I looked in on the map for mills, for a village who was the name Mill in, but it wasn't. But I went then there, and I was led to a place. And I came to a company who sells houses.
The real estate company.
The real estate company. And I say, after a week of searching, I thought I quit the mill. I just look for a house. I said, what do you look for? He asked me, is there a house? And then he said, I have something very nice for you. It's an old mill. And then I said, oh, wow. And the voice said to me, when you are going, you go there, your emotions, your movement will show you that's the place.
But you will know immediately that
And I was there, I started crying, and it was...
But it was an old deserted building.
It was the second house of that's...
But I mean, it's not the kind of thing you would think.
No, it was huge. It was very big, and I had no intention to start a center there. I mean, I did 20, 30 years of therapy work, and I had a bit enough of it. I wanted to take a rest, and so I had no ambition to start a center there. Mm. So I said, what to do with a big house like that? And then the voice said, you just go to live there, and everything will come to you.
Mm-hmm.
So take it easy, take time for yourself, and we'll see.
I think that's a real leap of faith, because here she had the house in Holland that was all finished.
Renovated, nice farm.
Very comfortable.
Yeah.
And then to listen to what they were saying to her and to follow those instincts, that takes a real leap of faith.
Yes, and we had not enough money, so we had to loan it.
Get a loan?
Yeah, get a loan, and the banks wouldn't loan us. All kind of complications, but it was so clear for us. I couldn't say no. I mean, I was also happier also to have a change in my life. But I did, for myself, I never had the idea to immigrate. I was happy in Holland, and I was
go into France, where, you know, it's a different language.
Yeah,
everything.
Yeah. I couldn't speak staying in France. I couldn't speak the language.
But, you know, how many people out there listening have had these instincts and the feeling they need to change their life, they need to go somewhere else, but they don't follow it up because they said, this is crazy. We are everything we need. We're settled.
Yeah.
Why should we go off to a strange place?
Yeah.
But it was very brave of you, really, to listen to that and follow it.
Yeah, it was so clear. I was no moment of hesitation, of doubt, no.
Mm.
No, though I had to sell the house we just bought four years ago, before. But it was so clear. I went for the adventure.
Mm-hmm.
And now, after 9 years, it shows that this was the right thing to do and a mm-hmm. nice step in my life.
But like you said, with no money, then you had to rebuild it and turn it into a living place.
Yeah, so we learned to do everything. I can build houses now.
I know what you mean, because I built my house,
you know,
so I know
too,
that
yeah.
you learn
yeah.
a lot.
Yeah, it's nice also as a woman that you can do the things you normally won't do as a woman.
Yeah, that's what they always say, a woman can't do these things.
Yeah.
But if you let if you let things like that hold you back, you'll never do anything anyway.
Yeah, and it's nice. It gives you more confidence that you can do all the things that you try. And most of the thing is not you have not the muscles well, like a man. But
well, it's the same thing. People probably told you, well, you're going to go all the way to America. Why?
Yeah.
You do what you feel you're led to do.
Yeah, I didn't know why I came to America. I just knew I had to visit you and put some sessions with you, and so it was a surprise.
But when you know, it shows if you listen to these things, they usually work out.
Yes, of course, yes.
They aren't going to lead you in the wrong direction anyway.
Yes. No, and it's a kind of a test to get confidence in that inner voice. And the more you listen and you follow, the more you get trust to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And the more the voice comes. I mean, it's a kind of accumulation.
Then you know that it's real, and you know to trust it. That's very important.
Yeah.
Because there's so many people that are afraid to. They say, you know, maybe they'll lead me in the wrong direction or something.
Yeah, but the fear that gets you back in your evolution. And,
people are afraid to do anything that way. They're afraid to try anything new.
Yeah, but therefore, I worked a lot on myself to overcome my fears and to overcome all the old stiff patterns in myself.
Yes.
And if you work on that, then new doors get open.
Oh yes.
In which you learn to be adventurous and to learn to do crazy things in your life. and yes, just follow the voice inside, and then your life gets changed and new. Miraculous.
Because a lot of people tell me they're afraid to go anywhere, afraid to do anything. Well, then they'll sit in their house and never do anything.
Yeah, yeah.
Then at the end of their life, it's, well, I wish I would have done these things.
Yeah, it's too late. You're a cripple.
Well, Reed is a psychotherapist and a psychologist. And he said, how many years were you doing therapy?
I think...
altogether?
For my 27 years, yes.
That you've been doing therapy. Okay, and let's talk first about some of your own books,
mm-hmm.
because Reed has the Astart Publishing Company. That's what she calls it, isn't it?
Yes,
the Astart Publishing Company. It's mostly in Dutch,
Holland.
And she has published some of your own books were published by another publisher first. Okay, why don't you tell us something about the book that you were mentioning to me that had to do with one of your past lives?
Yeah.
During World War II.
Yeah, the first book I wrote was called The Power of Destination, and in that book I write down my memories I had. After doing some sessions in hypnosis and many dreams and other kind of therapies, in which I remember that I lived in the time of World War II and ended my life as a Jewish young woman in Auschwitz. Mm. That was the first past life I remembered. And when I remembered that life and relived through all the emotions, that opened up a lot in myself, a lot of old fears and so it was a very good opening for my development.
But yeah, Auschwitz, I think people probably know what Auschwitz was, but there are some younger people that don't. It was one of the death camps during World War II.
Yes.
Where, wasn't it in Poland? Or
in
where,
Poland.
In Poland.
Poland, yes.
It was located in Poland in World War II, and the Germans took many of the Jewish people to these death camps.
6 million. Yeah.
6 million. Mm-hmm. And they never came out. You know, a lot of them didn't. They died there.
Yeah.
Some of them from starvation, and some of them were gassed in the gas chambers. There was many horrible things that happened during those times with the death camps, and Auschwitz was one of these. And, you know, I've also done sessions where people remembered lives that when they were in World War II in these places, and they come back very quickly. It does have an effect on your life now, the fears, and you don't know where they came from.
No.
But in that life, you did die there in Auschwitz,
yeah,
didn't
you? I did die in Auschwitz. Not in a gas chamber, but I was shot.
You were shot in that lifetime.
Yeah.
And you came back then very quickly.
In 48. I died in 43, and I came back in 48.
Mm-hmm. When you do that, sometimes it's all very fresh, and it can affect this life when you come back so quickly.
Yes, yes. I don't remember that I had special fears. I mean, as a child, I was very fearful. I don't know if it is connected with that life, maybe. But for me, it was most important of remembering that life that I wanted in that life. I wanted to become a writer.
Oh, in that Jewish life.
Yeah, that Jewish life, and I wrote my diaries and. They got published later on in the years 80. They were found in 1980.
This is similar to the Diary of Anne Frank, then,
yes,
that famous book.
Yes, she was older. I was older.
But they did find the diaries that you wrote
in
the 1940s then.
And they were found in 1980s. Uh-huh. And but after I remembered that life, then I started to longing also to become a writer. And before I was 38 when I remembered that life.
You were already a therapist.
Yes, and I never wrote a book or never wrote anything. I mean, not special. And then I got the longing of I'm a writer. I become a writer. I go to write. Then I started my first book, writing these memories. And afterwards, I wrote some 5 other books. So that's all started. So that when you relive another life, it's not always to cure old trauma. It's also to get back some talents you forgot or you were not in contact with.
But it came forth for a reason.
Yes,
There was some reason that it had to come forth in your life at that time.
Yes, it started with a dream. I had a dream that I saw trains and you know, went to Auschwitz. That was in the brain dream. So it was a dream that came from nowhere. I mean, I never occupied myself with that. And then I did the hypnosis sessions to get to know what the dream was mean, and then I saw all the pictures.
And you began to get the information.
Yeah.
I think that's interesting that they did find the diaries.
Yes.
So they proved then that you did live at that time, and the diaries are real.
But many people say, you read the diaries. That's the name I had, and that I was Etty Hillerson. And they say, you read the books, and therefore you think you were her. But I read her book before, in a few years before, but I found them good, but I was not very in...
You mean they think you were copying the diary of Anne Frank?
Not Anne Frank. The diaries of Etty Hillerson, they were found in the 1980s, and I read them, and afterwards I remembered being her.
Mm. I see.
And people said, many people, women wanted to be at the Hillerson. And I said, I was not very, I didn't very adore her, so many people adored her because of the diaries. I wrote them. I I read them and I find them good, but not special. So,
but
for
you
me
have
was
much
a surprise.
More. You have much more memories though than what
yes.
were in those. Don't
yeah, you? And therefore I. They in Holland in the 1980s they admired her because, like a saint a bit because
oh.
she was a very metaphysical diary or so and
but
I,
she was just an ordinary woman.
Yeah, and I showed in my book she was an ordinary person. I showed all the neuroses that were also involved, especially she could have hired herself and not going to the camps. But she went voluntary, and there people admire her for. And I say
that's where they mean.
Yeah, and I say it were old guilt feelings. It was in my memory.
Oh, okay.
So
well,
okay, but this was my first book. So primarily, I wrote it to overcome my fear to show my experience.
Mm. But you said this book is no longer in print in Holland.
No, you can download it from my website.
From your website,
yeah.
It can be downloaded in English, too.
They have to write me an email, and then I will send it.
You do have it in English.
Yeah,
but
I have it in English.
It's not in a book form anymore.
No.
But it is can be downloaded on your website. Do you
yeah.
want to give your website?
Yeah, it's in Dutch, so I have to speak Dutch.
You may have to spell it.
Yeah.
Okay.
The website is licht.werk.com.
What does that mean?
Sparkle of light.
Oh, okay.
So we call our work spark of light work. Sparkle or spark? Sparkle of light work. Okay.
Spell it so that...
In Dutch?
Yeah,
no.
Well, spell it in English so they can write it.
Licht.
you have a different pronunciation
yes,
for the letters. Oh,
so,
okay.
Lichtbundwerk. When they put on my name, Riet Ockham, then
that's
then
the way to do
it.
That
yes,
would be much easier.
Yes,
because
yeah.
when I've traveled in Europe, they have different pronunciations for
oh,
the
yeah,
letters.
Yeah, yeah.
And it gets a little confusing. All right, so if they go on the internet, usually Google is when
yeah,
that's
Google,
when
yeah,
on
yeah,
Google.
They find
and
me directly.
You type in Riet Ockham, and it will bring up everything about you and the website.
Yeah.
And to spell her name, it's R-I-E-T, Riet.
And
the last name is O-K-K-E-N.
Yeah, okay.
Riet Ockham, and you'll be able to download a lot of information about her and hook onto her website and find out about these books she has written, because some of them are out of print and then other ones are still in print now,
yes,
aren't they?
Yes.
All right. But then, let's see, we have so much you want to talk about. I want
yeah.
to get into your therapy also.
Yes.
But you decided to form your own publishing company
yes.
too.
Yes, I didn't like to beg for by the publishers to ask, do you want to publish my book?
We've all been there.
Yeah,
please look at my
yeah,
manuscript,
yeah.
you know.
And I wanted to earn money for the first time on my books, but I mean, normally you get 5 to 8%, and I mean...
We get more than that.
Yeah,
here.
Just those times, the beginning of my book was 8.5%, not more.
Mm.
So I was thinking, I found it very dishonest that as a writer you get so less.
Oh, yeah,
little.
But, you know, as a publisher, we know the other side of it, too.
Yeah, I know it now.
You know it now, but that's
but
the...
I give my writers more than 5%.
I try to give mine a good deal also,
mm-hmm.
because most writers don't understand all the different parts
yeah,
of the
okay.
publisher.
Yeah, yeah, it's a lot of investment you have
okay.
to yeah.
But then you started your publishing company,
yeah,
and
yeah.
you have published several books.
Yeah. Yeah, the first one we published was my book, The Liberating Power of Emotion. So that's the main thing now of my work.
Okay.
So the work on emotions, because I found in my own life and with others that without the transformation of the emotions, of the trauma and the emotions involved, spirituality cannot be very sound. I mean, it becomes how do you say that? Down to earth. I like a spirituality who is on this earth, who is down to earth, with the feet on the ground.
Okay.
And the transformation of your emotions and your body gives the ground
for the grounding,
the grounding for the sound spirituality.
Okay. This is part of your what you do with your therapy work now.
Yeah.
In the beginning, it wasn't that kind of therapy, though, was it?
Yes, also, but I evolved more and more into this.
But when you talk about the transformation of emotions,
mm-hmm.
Let's see if we can make it easier for them to understand.
Yes.
Because we all have emotions, and, you know, many people, the emotions rule them.
Yes, that's...
And, like, I've just begun to read your book.
Mm-hmm.
She's translating it into English, and it had to do with controlling emotions. See if you can explain it better.
And most of the time, what most of the people what we do in life is we control the emotions, or we venting them out.
You vent them,
acting them out in your daily life. So, and that's where all the wars and conflicts come from. And I think that there is a third way necessary, and that is that you learn to know your emotions, you learn to express them, but in such a way that you don't harm anybody, that you don't vent them out, you don't vent them subconscious. That you are aware of your emotions and that you are aware of the direction of your emotions. Because in the emotions, it is mixed, the past and the present is mixed.
The way we're brought up and the...
I will give an example. For example, you get easily triggered by authoritarian people when someone approaches you, authoritarian, and you get triggered and you become angry or afraid, then most of the time it has a root in your past because you had an authoritarian father and you or a mother and you have not worked it through, you have not digested. And so most of the time what happens is you have not digested your past. Then you act it out in the here and now. So you get in conflicts with people, with a person, with your boss or someone who is authoritarian. So what I teach people is to get aware where your emotions come from, where your overload comes from.
Most people don't know. Sometimes they don't even remember the incident in their past.
Yes, exactly. And then they acted out with your children or with your colleagues, and there all the conflict starts from. So, first of all, what I learned is that you discern between the past and the present, and that if you get triggered by your boss because he said, you have to do this and that. And you get triggered by it. You cannot react normally. You have directly to go to your past, and it's my daddy, and then you go in your room and work it out with your daddy. So when you get angry at your boss, I say, okay, go in your room and take a pillow and something to hit with. And hit
I've heard that very good.
And hit your father. I mean, the neurotic part of your father. I mean, your father meant it all so good. I mean, all our parents.
I've always told people it's a lot easier to take it out on, hitting a pillow if you're angry.
Then
you don't want to hit a child or hit a person.
No, and if you hit it out for yourself, then you can deal easily with your boss because then your overload is gone. And you can say to your boss, hey, boss, I don't like if you scream at me. You can talk normally to me. Then you can be friendly, saying things like this. Instead of
we hope that the boss will accept it.
Yes, but instead of reacting and making a conflict and
or holding it inside.
Yes, but so because all of the emotions we have from our past stuck in ourselves we try to control them. But everything what you control, it comes by the little holes in everything what you put under the carpet. It comes.
Sweep it under the carpet.
But it comes to the surface in a way when you are afraid, when you are tired, then the emotions come and so then you vent it out, and then it has no sense.
But a lot of people can't trace it back to where it comes from.
No, but that's the work.
That's your work. But the average person, they just know they're angry, and they take it out on everyone around them.
Yeah, and therefore the work continues in our world. And so I think when you will find love, as spirituality is, for me, is love, is to do with realization of love, then you have to find your hate, your old hate. And hate is nothing and a fixation of your old anger. And that old anger that traces back to times where you were powerless as a child, or maybe also in a power in another life.
My work too deals with finding the answer in another life.
Yeah, mine also. So also when you were powerless, for example, if you were in Auschwitz, then when you are a victim, you are angry.
Well, that was definitely a victim in that life.
Yes. And then you are angry. And that angry, when you don't digest it, it gets stuck in yourself, or you become sick, or you get involved in conflict situations
with your loved ones, or your family,
your children, give it through to your children, and it's really very important for me for a true spirituality to do the emotional work. And in nowadays, I know it's not very popular, because in many physical and spiritual scenes, they all say, the emotional work, we are gone beyond that. We mean, we have to, it's the ABC, we have got it. But
we've evolved beyond that.
The most people are not beyond that. I mean, we can think that and we can hope that, but it's not true. I mean, everyone was a child, and when you were a child, you were powerless. Now say that, powerless.
Yeah, that's right.
Yep.
That's it.
So, and if you're powerless, then you pile up angriness. I mean, I
work with a lot of people like this.
Yeah, you know, I remember when I was a child, I mean, everybody said to me what I had to do. I mean, school, you have to go to school 8 hours a day in school bags, and I mean, you have nothing to say, so you suppress your anger.
But that's life. We, you know, the kids do
that's
have
life,
to go to school.
Yes, but we have made a crazy life. We don't live natural anymore in this world. And therefore,
because you can't very well tell the kids they don't have to go to school, because
I published a book of an American school, Sudbury Valley School. It exists already 35 years, in which the children are free. They let the children totally free. They can hang around whole days, whole weeks, whole months, till there comes a moment that kid gets curious and wants to learn. And there are children who want to learn to learn writing when they are 4 years, and others are 10 years, and they let them. And all that kids, when they are 18 years and leave there, they know what they want. They are very self-sufficient. And they are allowed at many universities in America. Without a normal diploma, because they are so wonderful people.
Hmm.
And so in Holland now, there are many schools, they call that Edelweiss.
I wonder, what's the name of the school? What do they call the school?
In America?
Oh, yeah.
Sudbury Valley School. There are many in America.
Sudbury
Valley School.
okay.
There's one in, Michigan, I think. I don't know, but they are
okay,
everywhere.
Okay, because I know I've heard of the Montessori, but you said it's not
that. No, it's not that. They leave all the children totally free, and they wait till their own curiosity wakes, and then the children know what they want to do in life.
Mm.
And in the first year they can play. They can play and hang around and
yeah.
And learn by their own. There are children who learn reading. Then they can read, and then they ask them, "How did you read? How did you learn it?" "I don't know." The child says, I can't read now. They learn it
naturally.
Naturally, yes.
But in a situation like that,
mm-hmm.
there are always some children. Maybe they think, "Well, this is fun to just play. I don't want to learn. I don't want to go."
Yeah, there are children who play for years.
Yeah.
But that's the child who is supposed to be to learn to play. I mean, it's an idea that the children have to go to school. That
be structured.
And be structured, I mean.
I was thinking this is kind of a radical idea. That's why I'm bringing up these other comments here, because I was thinking if a child was given a chance, they'd much rather just not go to school and just stay home and play.
Yeah, but the school they develop, the Sudbury Valley School in Holland, the Ieder Wijs School, They are in a natural surrounding. They can play outside, and I know children who are a week busy with digging hole and looking how deep they can go, and then they learn some geology and they look it up in a dictionary. But it started with digging holes. I mean, that's all.
Do they live at the school, or
no.
they go back? Still live at home?
Yes, still at home. So that book published me too, because that's where my heart is. Because I remember from my youth, I I was a good student, but I mean that.
Yeah, it's very structured. You know,
structured,
we have to do
controlled.
These things.
Yes.
What's the name of that book that you wrote?
The Freedom of the Sudbury Valley School.
Oh, okay. Can that also be downloaded on your website?
Not downloaded. It's for sale still.
Oh, it's still for sale.
Yeah.
In Dutch.
In Dutch, yeah.
But can it be downloaded in English?
Yeah, it's in English. But it's the same book. I think when they go to sudburyvalleyschool.org or .com, then they will find it there.
Mm-hmm. But if they write your name in, you will still come up with your website. These books will be mentioned on there.
Yeah.
Okay, because well, it's kind of a radical idea for Queen of America thinking like that, you know,
to let the
child just do anything they want.
Yeah, in Europe too.
But you know, who knows? It's an interesting idea.
It's wonderful people they create or created.
But these are popular in Europe, these schools?
Yeah, starting last year. Yeah, we have in Holland 11 or 12 schools. They have difficulty with financing because the government will not support them.
No, I would think they wouldn't, probably, because they're stepping out of the norm.
The
you
order.
Know, they're going off into something that's not normal.
But I support that very much, that kind of, because it connects to our emotional work. I mean, how the more the children keep their freedom, The less they have to suppress, and the less they need therapy afterwards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would make sense. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
But, you know, talking about, too, we have to control our emotions to a certain extent because we do live in a civilized society.
I would not say control. You can, sometimes you have to park. Park, like you park the car.
Yeah.
You park them when you... For example, you notice you get angry with someone, then you say, okay, I park it, and when I got home, I look at it, where it comes from.
Yeah.
So you take your own responsibility, and you work it out for yourself.
If you can find it.
If you can find, yeah. Now, if you not can find it, you look for a therapist.
Hmm.
Or you do a week at our
center. At your school, your center.
I mean, I think it's important.
Because you go to a normal therapist, you know, as a psychologist, the way you're trained, you go to a normal therapist. Mm-hmm. They're not going to to look at it the same way.
No, nowadays they don't. They are more and more superficial. Mm-hmm. And I think the roots are in the past where you were powerless. And so we work a lot on the ABC of the development. So going back to the mom and daddy, and to the priests and
the whole
and the church, the whole thing that suppressed your energy. And so in our house in those weeks, there's a lot of screaming, a lot of crying, a lot of tapping on the cushions.
So when they're at the class.
Yes,
you mean,
and a lot of laughing, but it's also fun. It's fun.
But they're venting all these
deep-rooted
emotions they couldn't get rid of.
Yes, and afterwards, then people are more free, and they can more handle normal relationships.
But this could be more easily done in a closed environment like that.
Yeah,
where you couldn't do it on the street.
No, I would not
advise
that.
You would have to, in a closed environment with like 10 people, they get to know each other and they feel safe that they can vent their emotions.
I mean, you have to start in a laboratorium situation, a lab situation, and then that you can transmit it to other situations in your life, and yet you can handle it. I give the tools to work at home with it. It's very easy.
Mm-hmm. Once you know what you're doing, what you're looking for. Uh-huh.
Yeah, but most of the time you don't have to know before. Just when you feel a load in your trigger, you get angry or you get sad, depressed. I advise people to go lay down, do music on, hyperventilate.
You mean hyperventilating means to breathe.
To
breathe. That means breathe very fast.
Very fast. Yes. To wake up your body. And then with that hyperventilation, you have more chance to get into contact with your emotions.
Okay.
And when you feel your emotions, you can let them, the memories may come back afterwards. So you don't have to look for it mentally before.
Doesn't always happen at that moment when you're lying down, then you mean it may come later?
No,
it
happened
at the same time? Or what?
Yeah, when you lay down and you hyperventilate, often the emotions will come. And and then when you admit the emotions, then the memories who are attached with it come easily back.
And you just trust whatever comes into your mind.
Yes.
Yes. Some people, even with hypnosis, think they're making it up.
Yeah.
But I would say, why would you make up that?
Yeah, but emotions, I mean, emotions don't lie. I mean,
if
you start to cry, it's something that's real. I mean,
That's what I tell people during our sessions.
Yeah.
They tell me afterwards, maybe I made it up. But if they were crying and getting emotional, then I know it's real. You can't fake that.
Yes.
It's coming from something very deep inside.
Yes.
And then they look at it differently because, why would they be crying?
Yeah. That is well.
That's part of the therapy, too, is to let it out that way.
Yeah, in a safe way. No one disturbing. And then you have more chance that you project less in the world. That is our problem in the world. We project our own unfinished business interior. We project it in the world to a boss, to colleagues. On other people. And then the stories go on and on, and then the worker goes on. So for finding peace in our world, I think we have to find peace in ourselves and work through all the emotions.
But try to tell that to the leaders of the countries who
are
going to war, you know. They need to find peace within themselves, really.
Yeah, it's a message.
So it's a massive job.
It's a massive job, yes.
To try to get it all out.
Yeah.
But you also do other forms of therapy when you're working with these people, too, don't you? You said you do the muscle testing?
Yeah, for diagnosis, to look what is most appropriate, most important at this moment, but then most of the time I use music and hyperventilation. So it's a form of therapy from I I learned from Stan Grof, Stanislav Grof, of the Czech or American psychiatrist, who calls it the holotropic therapy.
Holotropic,
yeah.
Because I was thinking with hyperventilation, you can pass out.
Yes, but it's not bad.
But
what do you mean by pass out?
You would go unconscious, you know, like faint, you know, you would...
Yeah, but people tend to faint in the beginning, but that's fear. That's fear. They just focus, I've gone away. I don't want to feel.
Don't want to feel
the emotions.
Okay, I see. Okay.
And when you give them assurance, okay, feel the emotions. Okay, we are with you, and so on. Then they don't pass out. It just.
I'm thinking just the breathing can do that. I'm just interjecting my own thoughts here.
Yeah, no, it's okay.
But you were taught this. This is a method that this other psychiatrist uses in America.
Yeah.
He does the
and
same.
I combine it with Gestalt therapy. So I had a lot of trainings in all kinds of different directions, and I made up my own mixture.
That's what I always tell people.
Yes,
make up your own.
Yes, and that's what works. And I am a very practical person, so I like to do what's effective.
Mm-hmm.
I like success.
Because, you know, I always say someone in the beginning had to figure these methods out themselves.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean that's the only way to do it, and must do it step by step the way they were taught.
Oh, no.
Because in my hypnosis classes, some people say I cannot deviate. I have to go step by step by the way I was taught, and they can't think for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of people take all forms of therapy. There's so many different kinds out there.
Yeah.
Reiki, all kinds of healing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I tell them, even when they take my class, eventually they'll combine it all together.
Oh, yeah.
And make their own method.
Yeah, and some day in your life you need this direction and this technique. And some people are more open to that kind of therapy. I mean, what works is okay.
There's no right or wrong. It's whatever works for the person. As long as the client, if the patient is not harmed in any way, you can experiment with some of these different forms of therapy.
Yes.
But explain what the muscle testing is. Some people may not know what that is.
Oh, yeah. Okay. our body knows what is true and not true. Our body tends to show in the little muscles what is true. I mean, mostly with the muscle test, you have yes and no questions.
Okay. Yes or no.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. You have also many other things. So, for example, if I look at you very angry or very sad, very depressed, and I test you with muscles, then you will become weak.
You put the arm out, don't you?
Yeah,
the person puts the arm
out. And then you push down.
Uh-huh.
And then when the muscle gets weak, it's something what lowers your energy. So, for example, when you look to a person who is depressed and I test you, then your muscle will surely go down. And something what reinforces your energy, then your muscles stay strong when I push it.
So these are really answers that are coming from the subconscious mind.
Yes, yes, yes.
Because most of the time they're not what the person knows consciously.
Oh, yeah, no. Mm-hmm. I can, when someone comes to me and I test them, I can directly say, what happened when you were 4 years old? Your arm now tells me we have to talk to something. But that happened when you were 4 years old.
Okay.
The person doesn't know, but her body knows.
The body will know.
Yes.
And that's one of the things you do. And then you also use hypnosis, you said, don't you, with past life therapy? Or
past life therapy, but also not hypnosis directly. When I test the person, it can be something from the past in this life. It can also be another life
that is
important to look at now.
What I call it is a carryover, or it's a residue from something that happened in another life, and it's influencing this life.
Yeah.
And once you find out what it is, then it usually goes away.
Yeah, and then after we test it, and then we go to do the breathing work or the Gestalt work and work it out. So I have different techniques all together would work.
For different people.
Hmm. Yeah, for the, for different phases in the spaces in the in the in the work.
Hmm. So when they come to you for these courses, they're about a week.
Yeah.
They work with each one to go through this.
Normally, I work individually with them in the group, and then in between we go we do the intensive breathing sessions, and then they work two at two. But I'm always there to supervise.
That's why you don't want more than 10 anyway,
yes,
so
yes.
You can have a very interactive and intense with the person.
Yes, and also can look very precisely what is wrong with that person and what is with the other. I mean,
that way they don't get lost in a big class.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what I've told, people have told me when they've gone to classes, 25 people or more, they feel they're overlooked.
Yeah, and you can have something from that, but it's not so precise.
As
I like the precision, just what's going on with you, when it's wrong, and which way you have to go to develop.
So right now you're still writing.
Yeah.
And incidentally, republished two of my books in Dutch.
Oh yeah.
The book Between Death and Life that I was speaking about last week, the one What Happens When You Die and Where You Go Afterwards, she is published in Dutch, and also the first volume of the Nostradamus trilogy, Conversations with Nostradamus. She has published that in Dutch.
Yeah.
So I think we have them on our website, too. We have the pictures of the different languages that the books are in.
Also on our website.
They're also on that one. So there's... she's really involved in a lot of different things. I'm trying to think if there's something else we haven't covered, but there was so much in your life. It's very full. But
yes, this is the most important, the therapy work and the publishing work and the writing.
The writing, you're still writing more books.
Yeah.
And now you, you're going to focus more on lectures too, aren't you? And you have done lectures.
Yes.
But you're going to be doing more of those, too, with your new talk about your therapy.
Maybe, yeah, and I try to get my book published in English, and therefore I'm here with Dolores. Also. And
the problem is translating it into English.
We will fix it. And I try to, I'm in contact with German publishers, so in Germany, and I have a student of mine who lives in Berlin, so... You know, try to spread this work a bit about other countries other countries too. If I get the chance.
It just spreads.
Yeah, we'll see.
But you're over there where you can contact more people in Europe, so you can get it in more languages over there. You know, because you're right there. It's harder for us in America to approach publishers of that part of the world.
It's not easy to, so many books
up
there in the world.
Oh, I know there's lots of them. That's part of the problem. And you said you can't get it on Amazon because Amazon is mostly
English or French.
English or French.
They don't have in Dutch. But there are sites in Holland, that site, they can get our books.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's see, how many classes a year did you say you hold?
10.
About one a month?
One a month, yeah. About in the winter time we take off.
Mm-hmm. I do the same thing.
We do our hibernation.
I hibernate during the winter also.
Oh, yeah. So, but it's also then too cold and we have to heat with wood, so that's a lot of work. Just carrying all the wood upstairs. So we like to do it in the summertime. Then we have a nice outside river where you could swim in and a wood.
You said there's a river right by the old mill.
Yeah. And we're going to restore the electricity so we can make our own electricity from the
river.
From the river. So we want to live a bit off the grid, as they say. They call it in...
Well, that's the best way if you can get free electricity.
Yeah. So we play around and do all things that we like. Uh-huh. So then you have a nice life and you do what you like.
That's always the goal, that
yeah.
you can do
yeah.
what you like. And some
yeah.
people never
yeah.
get to do that. They are, we call, trapped in the rat race.
Yes, yes.
You have to make a living, you have to make money.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's also an indoctrination. I mean, you can live easy when you want. You can live from not so much money, and then you find your own creativity, and then you can create everything you want. Yeah, uh-huh. yeah.
That's the way to do it. You have seemed to have found the perfect world.
Yes, yes.
And you're helping a lot of people, and that's very important. Mm-hmm. So we're coming to time to close now.
Okay.
So if anyone wants to know more about Reet and find out about her website, to type in on Google, Reet Ockham. It's REETOKKEN. And it'll bring up her website and all of her work. And you'll be able to download some of these books in English, too. So I think she's doing a very valuable work, and I think it's wonderful that she has come all the way to America, to the hills of Arkansas, of all places. She'd be able to go back and say she's been in America, but it's just been in little towns here in the hills. But she said she loves nature anyway. So she
and
won't,
I love you. Okay, for you.
She won't have much to tell people back home about America, except it's very similar to where she lives. All right. Then if anyone wants to contact me, the website is Ozark Mountain Publishing. It's the name of the company, and that's abbreviated on our website, www.ozarkmt.com. It's abbreviation for mountain. OZARKMT.com. Or for those in Europe, it's OZARKMT.com. Or you can call our 800 number, 1-800-935-0045. 1-800-935-0045. For more information about the books, about my classes in hypnosis, about private sessions. All right, and good night. And next week, I'll continue with the stories about life after death.